Talk given Sunday, 30th October 1977. I think we can all agree that the human race today, the world over, is moving faster and faster towards the edge of the precipice. Such anarchy, such evil prevails in practically all the countries of the world. The worst aspect of it is that the rule of law has become a wish. It is certainly no longer a fact. And when that happens, all civilization goes down. We know of the events that are taking place every day for many years now. Evil things are being done in greater and greater degree. The people of the world seem to have lost their moral backbone. And naturally, everywhere one questions, what can be done about it? Nothing can be done about it. Nothing whatsoever on the plane of the evil. In the context of the disease afflicting mankind, nothing can be done, that means, at the political, economic, social, educational, or any such level. Whatever can be done in these fields is always a counteraction or it is merely ameliorative, palliative, which merely tries to deal with the symptoms and is never able to touch the root causes of this state of affairs. We do know from our knowledge of history that man has throughout the ages very largely moved from one darkness to another, from one state of misery and chaos to another. it is totally impossible to deal with world order and questions affecting mankind in all the countries of the world. Totally impossible at the level of the problem or the disease. Because as I said, you can only counteract or use a palliative or a tranquilizer at that level. What one needs is not a palliative, not something which may appear to solve the immediate problem, but sows the seeds of several other problems at the same time. What mankind needs is true healing. Healing is completely different from counteracting or tranquilizing. Why is it that man, as he is today, and indeed as he has been through the ages, why is it that man has been unable to heal? And remember, to heal means to make whole, complete. To make whole means to make healthy, and in its supreme sense, to make holy. Man doesn't know how to do it. How is it that he doesn't know how to do it? How and why are we in this state of abysmal ignorance? What is it that we are ignorant of? We are ignorant, first and foremost, of the ways of the self within us. We are self-oriented. Our selfness plays the dominant part in our daily lives. And self-orientation is the source, the fount of all our failures all along the line. Only exceptional individuals here or there understand themselves and are able to live in such a manner that they are truly human in the full and the pure sense of the word human. We have considered this meaning of human in previous meetings. All I need to repeat here is to live as a true human means to live as a happy creator we don't know the meaning of creation. We only know the meaning of procreation, not merely in biological terms, but also in cultural terms. But what we do know has not the power of creative renewal. A total creative renewal from instant to instant. Not as something which happens just now and then will stay put for the rest of our days. Which brings me to the next point, that not only do we not know the ways of the self in us, but we do not know the nature of our human existence. We think in terms of producing a result which will remain agreeable to us throughout all our days. In other words, throughout time. Time as a straight line movement. And it is this straight line movement of time through which we want things to stay as they are, spells fixation within us. Fixation particularly of the psyche. The psyche wants to be comfortable. It doesn't want to live in rhythm with the creative pulse of life. To use other words, to live in terms of immortality and eternity. The creative pulse of life does not stay put. It is perpetually creative. It makes everything absolutely new from moment to moment. And we obstruct that. Because we want to be comfortable, we want to be safe. Above all, we want the gratification of our desires, our ambitions, our lusts, our petty little vanities, and our egoism. Consider all day and every day, just in what manner are we conscious of ourselves and of all existence? We are conscious of existence in terms of ourself and the rest of the universe. I and you. The self and the not self. We are vividly conscious of ourself, but we are quite ignorant of the ways of selfness within us. Therefore, we are everlastingly in this terrible conflict between self and not self. We can never solve this difficulty through brain knowledge, through ordinary study. All brain knowledge, all ordinary study is of the past, is that which is the known. But this creative pulse of life, which makes everything new, releases the unknown, not the known. Looking back into the known, we are looking at fossils. And according to the conditioning of our brains, and according to our own particular hunches, we interpret those fossils and make a structure which appeals to our little intellects. Not that way. There is no creation there. There is no being in tune with the rhythm of the whole cosmos that way. Therefore, our minds are not open, completely open. Even worse, not only do we have closed minds, but in our innermost consciousness, we are in a terrible sleep, dreaming dreadful dreams. We are not awake. These are some of the fundamental factors involved. We deceive ourselves when we imagine that we are concerned with truth, with reality, with living the good life, the religious life, the pure life, and so on. Admittedly, this is a desire in some of us in the world. But the desire which I have in my state of ignorance can never be allowed to come to fruition by me myself, because my own psyche is clogged, it's cluttered up, and therefore I remain unawake to all the things that I do, think, feel, say, imagining that I am doing the right thing, when in fact I am merely making confusion worse confounded. These are terrible things to say. They sound so sternly critical. This is precisely what we need. Not to be amiably critical to ourselves and our particular group or society or gang or whatever it is. This kind of amiable attitude towards ourselves spells our destruction. We have to be sternly critical, mercilessly critical. Judging flawlessly, but not cruelly. Because then we become masochistic. If we cannot be truly compassionate, not sentimental and smarmy, but truly compassionate to ourselves, it is impossible to be compassionate to others around us. And if it is impossible to be compassionate, it is impossible to see truth, to enter the state of wisdom. We have theologies, systems of philosophy. We have all sorts of schemes and plans and theories, politically, economically, sociologically, educationally. And the whole lot of them are largely, in some cases almost entirely, useless rubbish and contrary to the flow of the stream, the pure, pellucid stream of life itself. Out of rhythm, out of tune with the creative pulse as it goes on. We talk of God, we talk of Brahman, Allah, Ahuramazda, the unborn, the unbecome, the unmade, the void, and all kinds of wonderful things like that. In themselves wonderful. We talk of transcendence, immortality, eternity, and we know nothing about it. For one thing, we forget we never can know anything about any of these in terms of knowledge as we define knowledge. Mental constructs which have become fixtures in our brains. The brain is never quiet, it's never still. It's always chattering. What is it chattering about? Watch very, very carefully. It's perpetually chattering about oneself. The shortest word in the language, I, is the one which occupies the greatest space, and in most cases the total space of our own psyche and mind. And the whole of the universe, the not-self, is supposed by us to serve us, our desires, our greeds, our hates, our stupidities above all. Take just one phrase which is on everybody's lips. The standard of living. What can people mean by the phrase the standard of living when they have not the faintest conception of what it means to live? To live humanly. it would be really difficult to find 5 people who really understand the meaning of living humanly. What does that stupid phrase, standard of living, mean for mankind in actual fact? When I say mankind, I don't mean the other fellows outside. We have an inveterate tendency to talk about the other fellow when we are talking about something unpleasant, not about ourselves. Talk about ourselves, see into ourselves. What do we mean by standard of living? We mean the standard of self-indulgence. Nothing else. Make no mistake about it. It's the standard of self-indulgence, of the expression of that in us which continuously obstructs the functioning of transcendence, the functioning of truth, of wisdom, of love, of goodness, of beauty, through us as living human beings. We are completely self-oriented. When we come across religious teaching, and when we seriously, quite sincerely, and I do not challenge our sincerity, when sincerely we try to inquire into ourselves, what do we discover? If we do discover rightly, we discover one supreme fact first. And if we are decent inside ourselves, we acknowledge that fact and say, I do not know. We think we know. We don't know a thing. We don't know that we ourselves as such are just nothing. The mystical, the religious, the yogic, and other disciplines which we take to have this sort of statement in them, that when one is reduced to his own nothingness, then he is at last truly human, truly the happy creator, reduced to our own nothingness. It's put in another form when it is stated that when the soul stands before God, it can stand there only because it is completely naked, denuded. Denuded of all selfness, utterly denuded. It gives a lovely feeling to come across these statements and so forth. But look carefully into that feeling. Does it give us pleasure? If it gives us pleasure, we certainly do not understand the truth of that statement about our denudation. Do we experience deep suffering, remorse, condemn ourselves as the world's worst sinners, which indeed we are. If we condemn ourselves, then too we haven't begun to understand the meaning of that. When we really understand, there are no more any pros and cons. No more for, no more against. Not that the duels have been eliminated, destroyed, not a bit of it. The duels have become so perfectly related, and more than the duels, the triplicities and so on, the multiplicity has become so related in fullness that it is no longer a case of separate notes in the symphony of life which are discordant with each other, but which make the grand concord. Because of right relationship, this is a very different state altogether. So pay attention and wake up to our own state. Don't rush off to a psychiatrist and all those people. They are also sick souls. Find me any professional psychologist or psychiatrist who has realized the state which is the state of the completely purified psyche. If the psyche is completely purified, then mind in its universal wholeness, in its transcendence, functions freely through your psychophysical organism. To put it in the form of the Greek myths, Eros and Psyche's nuptials are consummated, and that consummation is a timeless conjugation, not a thing which happens now and then it is finished, because you are in tune with the creative pulse of life which goes on all the time. So we have to begin to understand this difference between the psyche, which is my specific psyche, because all the mental phenomena, the processes of one's own psyche, are special to that person. They will bear a similarity of type, the type of functioning which we commonly call love or hate, anger or jealousy or kindness or generosity. The type will be, there'll be just so many types. But the particular functioning will be your particular functioning, your uniqueness, the variety of the world which is embodied in each and every single thing and person in the world will be manifest through you. So it will be your psyche, undoubtedly. But when you are freed from bondage of your own psychical state, which is a state of suffering in the profound sense, not only the Buddha, but all the great teachers understood this and taught it. When you are free of that bondage, then that is the end of suffering in your own being, doesn't mean it's the end of pleasure or pain. Those duels do come, but you can rightly relate them, you can deal with them rightly. And then this thing, mind in its totality, in its universality, functions freely through you. What is mind? You have heard me use the word transcendence, you have heard me use the phrase the one total reality. If you've heard it once, you've heard it 100 times. Transcendence we don't know, we'll never know, we never touch, as long as this psychophysical organism is there. And when I, the psychophysical organism, am dead, there is no more knowing by me. There is no more me at all in any shape or form. The me, the being which is manifest here, has returned to its primordial source, the utterly unknown and unknowable non-being. It is not annihilated. This is a mystery the intellect can never understand or formulate. You can experience it whilst you're alive, not afterwards. This is how and why the great teachers have affirmed immortality and eternity without any equivocation or hesitancy. Now, transcendence we'll never know. Transcendence is supreme creative energy. I'm using the modern word energy rather than the word God or Brahman or anything else. It is the one ultimate energy which manifests itself in innumerable forms. That functioning of this energy, this unknown energy, that functioning of this energy which brings manifestation and differentiation into being is mind. If you look through the old scriptures, you will find this extraordinary presentation, the thought in the mind of God. We don't understand at all the meaning of the word thought and mind in the transcendental context. What we know of their meanings in our ordinary everyday context simply do not apply to that transcendental context. We can only use language in less and less misleading terms as we, quite rightly here, progress through life. But mind is that functioning of this unknown and unknowable energy which brings cosmos into being out of primordial chaos, chaos not meaning disorder, and returns cosmos back into chaos. You see, the brain is completely defeated if you try to understand these things. Now, man was created in the living likeness of the transcendent. I'm not using the words of Genesis as translated in all languages. And Elohim said, let us make man in our own image. We can put it in a less misleading form. That's why I say, man was created in the living likeness of this transcendent unknown. something to meditate upon. Not muse. Don't start writing essays in imagination. They'll all be futile nonsense if you do. But now, think of it this way also. Transcendence meditating is man, the true man. And because of our self-orientedness and our selfness, we prevent transcendent meditating from coming through into us, directing our lives. Without the brain interfering, without desires, ambitions, and everything which has to do with selfness interfering, that spells the healing of the human race.